It's my dear friends, if you have not heard yet,
from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
100th anniversary, finally getting around to this, you know, and I think, God, after beating our heads against the wall for 2 years now, we came up with something simple, easy, something for everybody that you're going to like. We labored on this one big time, and we kind of took the path of least resistance, but I think it makes the most sense. So if you haven't heard yet, I'll share it with you a little bit later, what we're going to be doing, when it's, well, it's going to happen, I believe, October the 11th is the date. And I'll tell you where it's going to be. I'll tell you who it's going to be. And, you know, we're going to have some fun. Why not? Big story today. Big story. The repairman who revealed the Hunter Biden laptop story. Have you heard this? He's suing Adam Schiff, CNN, Politico, and the Daily Beast. Kaboom! This guy is John Paul MacIsaac, and he decided to fight back after literally being harassed out of business for 18 months by big tech, the media in Delaware, the locals in the president's home state of Delaware. Big, ugly story, and I really think it's going to hurt the aforementioned parties because the dude's got a real case. He's got a Jim Dandy of a case, and as a result of his disclosure, he doesn't have a business anymore. And I don't blame him. I mean, he's standing up. Good for him. So, yay. It's a good story. A move by the Fed, supposed to be going after one of its most aggressive moves in maybe decades because of the inflation, because of the economy. 61% of the American population does not like what Biden is doing with the economy. That means the Democrats are dead. They're dead in the midterm. They're dead in the general. They're dead. So what the Fed is going to be doing is this aggressive move, raising rates by half a point, maybe even more. Investors wondering how aggressive they're going to get. Again, 61% of Americans think that Biden has butchered our great economy, which in the presidency before him was solid as a rock. And they want it fixed. But how is the Fed going to fix it? They're going to fix it by making it much more expensive for us to borrow to survive. Yeah, that works. That works. In a poll, and this is no surprise to me at all, we just see 18% of parents willing to vaccinate their kids under five against COVID-19. I have no problem with that story. I mean, I'll just say flat out, every doctor I know personally is telling me that's too young. It's just too young to be doing this. Still some unknowns there. I'll just spit that out. And that could be the entire story. Maybe I don't even need to come back to this today. All right? It's just, no. 18% of parents are saying, my kid's under five and we're not doing this vaccine thing. I have a guest today at noon. It's going to be good. His last name is Zanoni. You know that name? It should be a familiar name. That's the deputy sheriff that Margaret Mims has recommended to take her place when she retires from the very, very popular sheriff's position that she's maintained for a number of years. So that's going to be at noon today. That'll be a good one. That will be a good one. Speaking of races, this is amazing. This blew me right out of the water. A Donald Trump candidate in Ohio, in an open Senate seat race, J.D. Vance, has won a nomination in that state. What happened after the former president endorsed him, boom, boom, out go the lights. Most of the Republicans vying for the nomination in this open Senate seat, they wanted Trump's endorsement, including the former state treasurer, Josh Mandel, who ran as a pro-Trump politician. You know, Ohio has long been seen as a swing state. You know this. Trump won it by 8 points. Now, this guy, Vance, that was endorsed by Trump, as soon as he did that, as soon as Trump endorsed him, he's leading the race by 23%. Oh, my God. And now he won it, won the nomination. That's how quickly and largely, if I can put it that way, things changed when Trump laid the endorsement on this guy, letting you know that he still has clout. He still has huge clout. Interesting story, the fact that the electorate, the Republican electorate in Ohio, reacted so quickly, it lets you know that Donald Trump still has more clout than I possibly thought he could have at this point. So good for him. Interesting other points about that story we'll get to. North Valley Assembly race. We see the Fresno councilwoman, Esmeralda Soria, taking on the former sheriff up in Merced, Mark Pazin. you talk about a couple of people who are as different as different as different as different could be. She's got a lot of money to roll through this campaign. And also in the race is Carvassi, another name from the council. A lot of people are wanting him to step out. A lot of people are wanting him to stay in. He's running as a Democrat, even though he votes conservatively on the council. Now, maybe if he's running as a Democrat, he'll split the Democratic vote with her, and Pazin will, you know, easily be shooed in. At this point in time, Pazin would be my choice if I were to make a choice. But we'll see. This is going to be a complicated, interesting little race, and I'm going to get a kick out of it watching it. Remember all of the revenue that we were promised when the marijuana stores, the retail stores, were going to open up locally? We were going to make millions in taxes. Yes! And Fresno's not seen one penny, not one penny in tax revenue. Nothing from, you know, these stores that are allegedly getting ready to open or are open. And to me, the issue is not so much selling marijuana. I don't really give a damn. You want it? Go buy it. Fine. Wonderful. But, you know, making the promise from day one that it's going to be, you know, so much money in it for us, so much money that we're just going to be rolling in dough. I think that's just so wrong. Very wrong. Gavin Newsom, we'll talk about his first term a little bit. There's a headline in Cal Matters, and I don't know if it's a Dan Walters headline or not, but it describes the first term as something that's a little scary, you know. It has to do with reality, and I'll share it when we come to it. It's just a two-word headline, but I love it. And, you know, even though Newsom did so well in the recall, bigger numbers than when he was elected, I think he's in bigger trouble now than he's ever been, and I think he can be beaten. Not so much by a Republican, but I think it will have to be an independent at the top of the ticket. And I think this guy Schellenberger that we talked to on Friday, that he could be in possession of one of the biggest upsets ever in the state of California's history. I think it's going to be huge, huge, huge. Maybe. Now, my predictions are usually wrong, wrong, wrong. Very quickly, because I want to cut to the break early. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees are out there. Some people might say that these really aren't rock and roll types, but we'll play a little music and we'll get your opinion. All coming up today at News Talk 580, 1059, KMJ, and the Ray Appleton Program, and I'll be right back.
The Ray Appleton Podcast.
Ray Appleton, now.
Right now.
Click the podcast page,
KMJNow.com.
Now, we're going to do this later, but looking at these nominees for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and you debate rock and roll, Dolly Parton, who said she doesn't want the award, Eminem, who's a rapper, Lionel Richie, who's a crooner, you know, you got Carly Simon. They're not really rock artists in terms of rock and roll. But at the same time, you don't want the awards called the Contemporary Music Hall of Fame. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you rock. I mean, but I guess I'm just too much of a purist. There were nominees last year who are legendary in the rock field, just legendary, who couldn't get in. You know, I mean, for example, the MC5. Anybody who knows that kind of thrash that came out of the late 60s that led its way to punk and all of that, with, you know, the MC5 with their remarkable song called Kick Out the Jams, which I can't really sing on the radio or it would be my last day on the radio forever and forevermore. Kick out the jams, mother. I mean, it's they were. Yeah, I mean, they were, they're an institution. And then you got the New York Dolls. I mean, you know, they, right there at the beginning of the whole glam rock thrash thing. So, I mean, those are rock and roll bands. Devo. I mean, kind of a joke, but still. You know, you got Carly Simon. So, I mean, we're really beginning to take contemporary music of all genres and call it rock and roll, and it scares me. That's all. Maybe I'm being picky, you know, but I will check in with my fellow audiophiles when we get to this a little bit later this afternoon. But, I mean, come on. Yeah. Done for the moment. I find it very frustrating. The Delaware computer repairman who blew the whistle on Hunter Biden's laptop, this dude, good for him. He's filed a multi-million dollar defamation suit against Adam Schiff, CNN, The Daily Beast, Politico, saying that they all falsely accused him of peddling Russian disinformation. Oh, man. And Adam Schiff is now the head of the Intel Committee. Hello. Now, the former shop owner, because he lost his shop, is Jean-Paul MacIsaac. And he decided to fight back after losing the business and being harassed for 18 months by what he says is big tech, the media, Delaware locals, President Biden's home state. Quote, after fighting to reveal the truth, all I want now is for the rest of the country to know that there was a collective and orchestrated effort by social and mainstream media to block a real story with real consequences for the nation. The collusion led by 51 former pillars in the intelligence community and backed by words and actions of the politically motivated DOJ and FBI, as he continued, I wanted this lawsuit to reveal that the collusion was more importantly, who gave the marching orders? So he legally, this guy, he legally came to own this laptop. I mean, that's never been a question. Although some have said he's acquired it illegally, never been a question. He owns it legally. This was after Biden's son, Hunter, dropped it off at the store for repairs in April of 2019. He never came back. All the things were signed. All the documents were signed. He didn't do what he was supposed to do. The material on the laptop has raised, as you know, serious questions about what Biden knew of his son's overseas business dealings. During which, you know, and the president's brother, Jim Biden, they often invoked Joe Biden's very powerful name, the son and the brother. So MacIsaac handed over a copy of the laptop's hard drive to the FBI in December of 2019. 8 months later, alerted then-President Trump's lawyer, Giuliani, who provided a copy of the hard drive to the Post. Then the Post story first broke in October of 2020, just 3 weeks before the presidential election. So Twitter and Facebook moved to censor it. You got me? Twitter and Facebook moved to censor it. Then Schiff and 51 former intelligence officials labeled the laptop Russian disinformation. Based upon what? What? Because it's all been proven to be the real deal. So in the aftermath, MacIsaac said his business, his reputation, destroyed, ruined. Quote, Twitter initially labeled my action hacking. Hacking! So for the first day after my information was leaked, I was bombarded with hate mail and death threats, revolving around the idea that I was a hacker, a thief, and a criminal. And, you know, Schiff, who chairs the Intel Committee, like, you know, I've said, according to MacIsaac, he's got a lot of explaining to do. Without any intel, the head of the Intel Committee decided to share with CNN and its viewers a complete and utter lie. A lie issued in the protection of a preferred presidential candidate. I've since endured false accusations of being a Russian spy, a stooge for the Russian President Vladimir Putin, the fight to get to the bottom of who told everyone this was Russian disinformation is far more important for the nation than me clearing my name. In the suit, which was filed in Montgomery County, if you care, MacIsaac, you know, claims that Schiff defamed him in an interview on CNN 2 days later. I saw that interview. And the Post began publishing all the revelations from the laptop. So in the interview that it was with Wolf Blitzer, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was with Wolf, I'm sure. Schiff told CNN, without citing any evidence, because that's what Schiff does, he's great at that, that he believed the Kremlin was behind a smear of Joe and Hunter Biden. Okay? Well, I'm quoting the owner of the shop again, former owner. We all know this whole smear on Joe Biden comes from the Kremlin. That's been clear for over a year now. They've been pushing this false narrative about the vice president and his son. Schiff tells Blitzer, according to the suit. And then, you know, MacIsaac is forced to close his computer repair business near the Biden family home in Greenville, Delaware. After people started throwing vegetables and eggs and dog excrement at his store, you know, he went into exile in Colorado for a year. I think it was Colorado. So the suit claims that CNN knowingly, and they did broadcast false and defamatory stories, that the laptop was linked to a Russian disinformation campaign, causing MacIsaac, you know, significant damage including the closing of his repair shop. Quote, CNN's broadcast of that false statement accuses the plaintiff of committing an infamous act, treason, by working with Russians to commit a crime against the United States of America by attempting to undermine the American democracy and the 2020 presidential election, so saith the suit. Similarly, former owner accuses the Daily Beast, Politico, of peddling disinformation about the laptop in two articles, both published, both sites. The Daily Beast claimed that the laptop was purloined, which McIsaac says alleges that he stole the computer. In an article headlined, FBI examining Hunter's laptop as foreign op, contradicting Trump's intel czar. So the suit states. And in a very infamous story on Politico, and I remember talking about this, the website reported dozens and dozens of former intel officers believing the laptop to be Russian disinfo. Period. The article was written by a journalist whose name is Natasha Petrant, who seemingly has a history of transforming speculation into fact, and the stories upon which she reports, all, you know, the wrongful, but she turns them into facts, her way of doing things. Now, her attorney, Brian Della Rocca, said McIsaac is seeking at least $1 million in compensatory damages and punitive damages, which will be the much bigger number that will be determined at trial, end quote. So the former owner of the shop has suffered immensely at the false statements spread about those who brought the information on Hunter Biden's laptop to everybody's attention. So says Della Rocca, the attorney. He's lost his business. He's lost his friendships. His honorable standing in the community is gone. The lawsuit is to attempt to repair a small portion of that damage caused by the defendants in this suit. And we intend to show that their actions were intentionally malicious. Now, McIsaac tried unsuccessfully to sue Twitter for the disinformation last year and, you know, was very much lumbered and shut down by the tech giant's legal bills, which was an amount of roughly, I think it was $175,000 thereabouts. But McIsaac is now, he's got well-heeled backers. He does. The Nonprofit America Project, which was founded by Trump loyalists, Michael Flynn and his brother Joe Flynn and a businessman, Pat Byrne. We are honored to sponsor John Paul McIsaac in this fight against the injustice that's been done to him. When the political elite coordinated the leftist news media claiming that Hunter Biden's laptop was Russian disinformation, which was a blatant lie, end quote. The synchronized efforts of these parties to wield their words like weapons are evident through years long of continuous coverage that led to, you know, extreme public backlash against JP and closing of his business. And McIsaac has penned a book about his ordeal. It's called American Injustice, My Battle to Expose the Truth, which is going to be released in November. Now, the Post exclusively revealed the existence of Hunter Biden's emails in a series of reports in October of 2020 based upon contents of, you know, the damaged Mac Pro laptop, MacBook Pro laptop, that was abandoned at McIsaac's shops in the Biden's family town of Wilmington, Delaware. So after downplaying the emails as unverified, both the New York Times and the Washington Post authenticated many of them, including some apparently being used as a federal probe of suspected tax fraud, money laundering, and foreign laundering by Hunter Biden. So, I mean, I could go on and on, but you can see where this is going. And with what we know of what was on the laptop and what we have been able to corroborate about Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, and Jim Biden, the brother, Hunter's uncle, so much of what has been laid on this guy is complete and total crap. Crap. And it's now accepted as the real deal. And accepting it as the real deal, these entities that he's suing, they just go merrily along as if they committed nothing wrong. They've committed plenty wrong. And this is going to be very, very ugly for them. Very ugly for them. Russian disinformation. I mean, we're hearing this about every single aspect of the Trump presidency. It's just an old broken record that needs to go away. And this time, I'm hoping that there are enough people that will stand up, come clean, throw the book, and do the right thing. The right thing needs to be happening very, very soon. Or we're never going to see the right thing happen again in this country. And it needs to begin here. It has to. And the only thing against this poor guy and the fact that he had a shop is that shop happened to be in the hometown of the Bidens. And you know that's going to weigh against him as we roll merrily along through this whole thing. All right? Comments, if you will. Yeah, baby. 490-5858. 800-776-5858. I think this is going to be very big. Very, very big.
The Ray Appleton Podcast. Right now.
Click the podcast page.
KMJNow.com.
It's free.
Now, Ray Appleton.
So much coming up today. One story about California that I'm going to get on the front burner here very quickly that I thought would become a reality, but it's not, and I'll share that shortly. As you know, this year is our 100th anniversary. And for a couple of years, we've been trying to figure out what would be the best thing to do for you. I mean, we've got to have some kind of a little party. Where we're going to have a big party, we're going to have a little party, was it going to be a formal party, was it going to be an informal party? And, you know, part of what we do whenever we do something for fun for you is to lighten the load because of so much of what we do on the air is so heavy. I mean, look at 100 years of KMJ and what KMJ has been through. World Wars, Korean War, Vietnam, 9/11, hurricanes. We've just been one big black mark over society forever. But that's our job. That's our job to bring you the good, the bad, and the ugly. Pardon me, Clint. So we always opt for something fun to relieve us of everything that we have to lay on you here. So very conveniently, we took a day out of the Fresno Fairs lineup, October the 11th. They had a date that they had not filled yet for entertainment at the Paul Theater. And we said, well, can we have that? And they went, yes, you can. I said, oh, okay. So something easy. Something fun, something where we can relax, and I'll tell you how to get tickets and do all that as, you know, the time progresses here. Little comedy, little music. Little me saying hello, welcome, that's about it. Paul Rodriguez is going to be helping us out. He'll be doing a nice block of comedy for us. And then for tunes to relax, somebody universal, somebody that everybody likes, was just too easy. Tower Power. It's going to be Tower of Power. On this particular track, playing guitar is my dear friend since 1962, Bruce Cotty, who was with Tower Power forever and ever and ever and ever. And Bruce had been very sick, and we toyed with the idea of Tower doing this for us, and I just wanted him so much to make it to our 100th anniversary so he could have played with him one more time, but Bruce didn't make it. He, you know, succumbed to cancer earlier this year. So with kind of him in mind, I'm happy that we're doing this. But it's going to be Paul Rodriguez and Tower Power on October the 11th out at the Paul Theater. And short and sweet, that's it. And that's a nice, easy, yes, let's just get to it night and get down and have some fun. And that's exactly what we're going to do, you know? And so, I mean, anytime while we're discussing things on the phone today, if you want to add your thoughts on this show coming up on October the 11th, good idea, bad idea, love it, don't like it, can't wait, you know, whether you like it or not, we're going to do it, and it's going to be great. It's going to be a lot of fun, but we'd like to get your opinions, and then we'll tell you how to get the tickets and all that stuff, but it's nice and sweet and easy, and I love it. You know, who would have thought for a 100th anniversary of a radio station like this, we'd go flying down Tower Power, you know, waving them down, saying, do it. But, hey, it works, considering the demo and everything. I thought for sure things were going to be changing dramatically in California, and all of a sudden, we'd all be going to work for 4 days a week instead of five. Gavin Newsom said he wanted this. Gavin Newsom said he would sign it. That California bill that we talked about that would require businesses to pay overtime to employees working more than 32 hours a week, it got dumped. It got dumped. So don't count on a four-day work week just yet. The bill failed to advance this particular session in the state legislature after, you know, a policy hearing that was not set and did not make the April the 29th deadline to get the, you know, its passage along. So there was a lot of technical problems with this one too. Just not having it together. Now, the four-day work week would have applied to companies with 500 employees or more. So at one time, yeah, that could have been us, but now it would not have been us. And that's with unionized workforces. They're exempt. But, you know, some employers have already tested out the four-day work week, and they said it's led to an increase in productivity and profits. Every time I see this being done somewhere, even though I oppose it, and I have my reasons for not liking it, I think it's going to be problematic. It seems to work everywhere it's being done. Surprise. In Iceland, they tested a 35-36 shorter work week, as they call it, and studies showed that it was an overwhelming success. Microsoft trailed a four-day work week experiment in Japan of 2019. Said productivity, measured by sales per employee, went up almost 40% compared to the same period the previous year. Can you believe that? 40%? Jeez. So according to studies, the U.S. ranks amongst the top countries in hours worked per year. Americans spend less time than people from other developed countries on personal care and leisure. So in San Francisco, there's a tech startup up there, Bolt, said it's permanently switching to a four-day work week. And the CEO, Ryan Breslow, says, you know, it's leading to higher productivity. So everything I've seen shows me that I'm wrong. It works, it works, it works, it works, it works, it works, it works. Productivity is up. Revenues are up. You know, individual productivity on a per-man basis up by 40%. 40%? I am blown away. So, I mean, based upon that, I'm changing my mind. I would have liked to have seen this experiment anyway, as it's been done in other countries and other cities with companies of 500 or more. I think it would have been worth the effort to give it a shot and see how effective it would have genuinely really have been. But again, to tell you one more time, every time this has been done in communities where it has been done, we see productivity up, up, up. Uppity up, up. That's amazing. So, speaking of government projects and the like, there's a new law that has expanded Medi-Cal coverage to all Californians who are 50 years of age and older, regardless of their immigration status. Don't get me started. It's the Older Adult Expansion Initiative. It went into effect on Sunday. Extending medical, dental, mental health care to all Californians ages 50 years of age and older. Other Medi-Cal eligibility rules, including, you know, income limits, still apply, but immigration status is not among those rules. Make up your own mind there. So Medi-Cal has been expanded in 2020 to young adults under the age of 26. Really? With the expansion, Medi-Cal is expected to provide full medical coverage to more than 185,000 Californians. Whew. You know, and the program's expansion is expected to cost the state about $1.3 billion a year. Hello. You know, the state officials, they're kind of working with nonprofit organizations to publicize the expanded services to California immigrants, to apply, to visit the Department of Health Care Services and see where everybody sits on this one. So, yeah, why not? And this had to happen. Everybody has a gay parade now, right? Very quickly. There are plans for a straight parade to take place. It's taken a major step forward in Modesto. Oh, come on. The city is now considering giving the organizers the permit to do the event. There's a flyer circulating on social media, and it's advertising Stanislaus County will host a straight pride event in Modesto's Gracieta Park. I don't know. On August the 24th. And that permit is still hanging in balance. Quote, I don't think we need to give a permit for anything. That when you go to the page, it talks about whiteness, it talks about Western civilization, it talks about being Caucasian. The man behind it is a guy by the name of Don Grundman, and he's of the National Straight Parade Coalition. I think it's kind of funny. He said the parade event is the group's cultural answer to their opponents. Essentially, it boils down to two religious views of the world. One is Christianity, which is represented by heterosexuality. A culture of life and its opponent is the LGBT movement, which is represented by an opposing religion and an opposing view of life, said Grundman. Now, where this is happening in Modesto, the views seem to be very mixed. Some consider his views to be extreme. Others are saying, yeah, okay, you know, free speech and all that, First Amendment rights, yeah, carry on. What do you think? Straight parade. Huh? I mean, why not? If you can have a gay parade, why can't you have a straight parade? And is it going to be more divisive if indeed we allow something like this to happen? I mean, that's how silly the times are becoming. But I get it. I get it. I mean, we bend over backwards for every special interest thing that has to do with sexual proclivity, race, religion, or whatever. We do it all the time. But we do it in such a way that it just is divisive, because those of us who really don't fall into any of those special interest categories when it comes to sexual proclivity, religion, race, or any of that, I mean, we just are kind of the old boring two-dimensional white people in the corner that don't do much of anything. And if we want to have, you know, a straight parade or whatever, we become very demonic and we're horrible. And you know, I don't know what to make of this. I don't. I just think it's funny for the moment. But I can see where it would really piss some people off big time, you know. But if we don't start having a sense of humor about everything that we do, we're doomed as far as I'm concerned. So your comments on a straight parade? Good idea, bad idea, stupid idea, relevant idea, considering the times. 490-5858, 800-776-5858. I doubt that I'll get one call on this, but I just had to throw it out there today. On KMJ, News Talk 580, 1059, and the Ray Appleton Program. Very straight, very white, very boring.
The Ray Appleton Podcast, right now.
Click the podcast page.
KMJNow.com.
It's free.
Coming in the next hour. In fact, he's already here. He's ready to show it down. And he's got a big gun. Deputy Sheriff Zanoni, who would like to be Sheriff Zanoni. He is the one endorsed by Margaret Mims after a very popular run as sheriff, many terms she has served. And he's going to tell us why he's the guy to take over for this very popular lady sheriff. Today's Daily Buzz question, speaking of cases, races and stuff like that, KMJNow.com, what potential GOP presidential candidate do you like the best? Former President Donald Trump? Florida Governor Ron DeSantis? Former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley? Former Vice President Mike Pence? Or somebody else? Let us know. KMJNow.com. This could be good. Daily Buzz is sponsored by the Buzz Allergy, Asthma, and Sinus Centers. Dr. Buzz, I had an appointment with him yesterday. He could be a stand-up comedian, I'm telling you. If you ever get sick of being a doctor, I'm going to be his agent, and he will be the world's first stand-up Pakistani comedian. There are some very disturbing stories coming out of Ukraine that I'm going to get to in one big, giant thing. One problem is that there was a number of evacuees from a steel plant in Mariupol, and they were headed for a particular area that was deemed safe. They never arrived. it's become a major mystery. And it was hell rescuing these people, putting them together in such a way to get them out and moved into something that would be considered out of harm's way. They never arrived to where it was they were supposed to be going. And also defense leaders are saying that Russia is learning a lot about its mistakes in Ukraine. And the next, you know, chapter of this, if indeed there's going to be one, could be really scary. And within all of that, and I'm going to do all of these stories together as the day progresses, the EU has finally come up with a proposed gradual ban on Russian oil in a sixth round of sanctions against Moscow. This is going to really hurt the EU in a giant way. How the EU will get by is beyond me. We're no longer a net exporter as we could have been. We could have helped them out immensely, but we're not going to be in a position to do that now. But this is something that ultimately could bring Putin right down to his knees. And it's a very, very brave decision. So we'll see. We'll see exactly how this is going to work and how, you know, how the EU could be genuinely hurt big time. Big time. And as I mentioned also today, as we just kind of skim through some of the stuff we're going to be doing, the nominees for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I love this stuff, except when they're not rock and roll artists, such as 90% of them that have been nominated this year. And maybe that's just me and my too narrow of a definition of what rock and roll is. I'm just like this purist, you know. To me, rock and roll is one thing. And Dolly Parton and Eminem are not rock and roll. I'm sorry. It's the way it is. And cannabis, you know, pot, selling pot, was projected to bring in millions in taxes to Fresno. And we haven't seen a penny. We have not seen a penny. City of Fresno is apparently losing millions of dollars in projected tax revenue because these marijuana retail stores have yet to open. When the city council approved last year, I think it was last year's budget, it anticipated $4.3 billion in taxes from pot. And the number is estimated at 8.7 annually for the future years, including the fiscal years 2023. That's a lot of dough that's already on the books. So far, no marijuana retailers have opened in the city. And that means Fresno has not collected one shekel in the way of tax revenue from marijuana. You know, however, you got a city spokeswoman, Santoya Rose, know her well, hi dear, said that the higher than expected general sales tax revenue will offset the absence of the cannabis revenue. Now, I don't know, she'll hate me for saying this, if that's just bureaucraties or the real deal. You know, 20 licensees are in various stages of readiness to open, so I've been told. One necessity is a city-issued conditional use permit, specific rules of what will be and what won't be allowed at the business. So that seems to be the big bugaboo and where people are being held up. So who's to blame here? Who's to blame? Why are these things not opening up? I mean, a number of retailers haven't even submitted their CUP yet as of last week. So it sounds like it's in the lap of some of these individuals who want to open stores could be doing more. And then there's the problem, you know, with the bureaucracy downtown Fresno, anywhere in City Hall. Any aspect of trying to open up a business in this town is a nightmare. A nightmare. We will go through this chapter and verse later today for sure, because I hear about this stuff from time to time. Ray, where is the tax revenue from selling marijuana? We're not selling any. Why aren't we selling any? And then that's when the long explanation needs to begin. Ay, ay, ay. Break time. Hour number two coming up for the Ray Appleton program. Sheriff Zanoni will be here. He wants to be the sheriff. Right now, he's just a sheriff. We will explain phone numbers if you want to talk to him. 490-5858. 800-776-5858. Back in a flash.
It's the Ray Appleton Podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.